Penguin Random House Audio presents Avedon, Something Personal by Norma Stevens and Stephen M.L. Aronson. Read for you by Colleen Marlowe. Star quality. It can shine on peacock days like a plume of luck above your genius. Walter Sickert. Chapter 1. Overture. New Year's Eve, 1975. My husband and I were having a few friends over for a champagne toast. Martin was the worldwide creative director of Revlon at the time and had invited to drop by, should he have nothing better to do, his go-to photographer for big, splashy, four-color, lips and matching fingertips ad campaigns. Fire and ice. Persian melon. Cherries in the snow. Stormy pink. Wine with everything. A little before midnight, Richard Avedon, the nay-plus ultra arbiter of feminine grace and beauty, the ambassador of glamour, the epitome of chic, burst through our front door bearing a dozen American Beauty roses, which he presented to me with romantic comedy panache, fanning them out as if he were showing his hand in a card game. "You shouldn't have," I said. "But now I think I'd be disappointed if you hadn't." It was an entrance, a performance worthy of Fred Astaire. And why not, I thought, since Astaire's character in the film Funny Face had been modeled on him. I remember what he had on that night. Lavender silk shirt, skinny black knitted tie, dove gray double-breasted suit fitted to his wiry frame. And behind the horn-rimmed glasses, those black mile-a-minute pinwheel eyes. And then the crowning glory, his untamed mane of silvery hair. After I'd introduced him to our other guests, he pulled me aside and said, "I've got to talk to you. Where can we go?" I had met Richard Avedon for the first time in the late 1960s when I was a madwoman, the creative director of a small advertising agency. I worked on girly accounts like Coty, Charles of the Ritz, and Monsanto, cosmetics, fibers, and fabrics, while aching to cut my teeth on bigger budget stuff like cars and booze. One of my clients, Almay, was about to launch a hypoallergenic line to compete with Estée Lauder's Clinique, for which Irving Penn had produced a series of pristine still lifes that spoke to the product's immaculate conception. There was only one photographer who could give Penn a run for his money, and that was Richard Avedon. I contacted his longtime rep, Laura Canellis, who asked right off the bat, "What's in the budget?" When I told her, she said, "Forget it, he won't work for that." I doubled the money. She said, "Keep going." I said, "That's it." She said, "Okay, but you only get 6 months' usage." And she put me through to Avedon. "What's up?" he barked. I was hearing that unmistakably New York voice for the first time. In my New York voice, I told him how I saw the ad. Clean, white, pure, nun-like. He said, "I got it," and hung up. The morning of the sitting, I dressed expressly for him. Cream silk shirt. Crisp blue blazer with gold buttons, designer shoes. I walked the few blocks from my office to the Avedon studio on East 58th Street, eager to meet the legend. And I'm not embarrassed to admit that when he charged into the reception area to greet me, I felt the electricity. Over coffee, he fired off a volley of personal questions. Where had I gone to college? What was I reading? What did I like to eat? But before I could get two words out, he was directing my attention to one of his celebrated portraits of Marilyn Monroe that was propped against a wall. And before I knew it, he was telling me how she had reached out to him from a phone booth in Beverly Hills just a couple of days before she committed sui, because she needed him to know that he was the only photographer she implicitly trusted, and that more people complimented her on the pictures he had taken of her than on the pictures, the movies she'd made. "She confided in me an awful lot," he said. "She even gave me the phone number she said no one else had." At that point, the stylist appeared and said, "We're ready." And the model, a Swedish beauty, emerged from the dressing room. Avedon approved her hair and makeup, and then back she went to be dressed. But when she reappeared, she was swathed not in white organdy like the virgin I'd envisioned, but embalmed head to toe in rolls of saran wrap. He said to me, "Don't you love this?" I did. I recognized it as something that had never been done before. No surprise there. Avedon was the photographer of so many firsts. The first portrait of the first family, JFK and Jackie. The first belly button in an American high fashion mag, Susie Parker's. The first bared breasts, Contessa Christina Palazzi's. The first menage a trois. The first fashion mag cover boy, Steve McQueen. The first haute couture black beauty, Daniele Luna. The first to shoot outdoors in Paris after the occupation. So why not now, the first hypoallergenic mummy? He led the model onto the set, turned up the music, Ella Fitzgerald, and clicked away. When I presented the image to my client, they didn't buy it. They wanted something literal. I broke the news to Laura Canellis, who said, "No reshoot, and Avedon gets paid in full." This felt like the ending of Dick and Me. It was just the beginning. The next time I encountered Richard Avedon, I had just married his biggest client. He sent Martin the following telegram. "Congratulations. Stop. You have just won the marriage portrait of the year. Stop. You and your bride are expected at the Avedon studio on Thursday, 10 a.m. Love, Dick." I slipped back into my flowered black voile wedding dress for the occasion. Avedon took one look at me and said, "Oh, it's you, the Alme girl, the girl with white on the brain, who I see got married in a black dress. This union is doomed," he said, laughing. The celebrity hairdresser, Ernie Adler, was on hand to do my hair. When he was done, Avedon turned on the big band music he knew Martin liked and said to us, "Dance." I did an arabesque holding on to Martin's arm. I had once briefly been a bunhead, a baby ballerina. He said, "Fabulous," and clicked. It was over so quickly I had post-performance depression, which lifted the minute he brought out champagne and caviar, crying, "Eat, drink." Later that week, he sent us a complete album of wedding photographs, ending with the signed formal portrait, the first of the innumerable Avedons we were to own, and the most precious. It would be a couple of years before I saw Avedon again. Martin and I ran into him and his one-time star model, Dorian Lee, in 1972, in the lobby of the Paris Ritz, and he insisted that we join them for a drink in the bar. Martin and Dorian were nose to nose, catching up, so Dick turned his attention to me. "I've just bought a carriage house way over east on 75th Street that I'm going to make into my new studio," he said. "I'm planning to live there, too. Over the store, like the Goodmans do. Above Bergdorf." I asked him how his wife felt about the move. "I'm running away from home," he told me. "I'm flying the coop. I'm going to go it alone. Only, I haven't told her yet. What do you think I should say?" I was so startled by his question that I had to take a sip of champagne before answering. "Tell her it's nothing personal. It's just about work," he said. "Oh, that's good. You've saved my life." "Dick," Dorian was elbowing him, "you've been ignoring me." He spun around. "How could I possibly ignore my first bizarre cover?" he exclaimed. "My first face for Revlon. My fire and ice girl, who loves to flirt with fire, who dares to skate on thin ice. I even forgave her for having once been engaged to Irving Penn." He turned to Martin. "Did I ever tell you that Dorian and I won first prize in a Charleston contest at the Tavern on the Green when we were kids? Actually, I was 29 and leaving the next morning on my honeymoon with Evelyn." "Oh, boy," he said, turning back to Dorian, who was giving him an icy stare and breathing fire. "Let's go. We have a reservation at Vefour." No sooner were these avatars of glamour out of earshot than Martin was regaling me with how, once when he had had to put a Revlon shoot on hold because Dorian was outrageously late, Dick had amused himself by compiling a list of all the men he knew for a fact she had slept with. He had gotten up to 62 by the time she appeared and had just finished saying, "She'd go to bed with anything." Martin sheepishly informed me that he was on the list. Within the year, I heard that Richard Avedon had left his wife. I remember wondering if he had used my line of departure. Now, 3 years later, he was back in my life. He was standing in my living room, having just asked me where I was pinching myself, he and I could go to be private. I led him into the library, where he sank into the couch, put his head in his hands, and broke down. "Forgive me for making an exhibition of myself," he finally said. but the
sample complete. Ready to continue?